This is Hacker Public Radio, episode 3828 for Wednesday, the 5th of April, 2023. Today's show is entitled, The Oh No News. It is hosted by some guy on the internet and is about 18 minutes long. It carries a clean flag. The summary is, Oh No News is good news.
Hello and welcome to another episode of HPR. I'm your host, some guy on the internet. Let's begin the Oh No News.
Oh no!
We're going to start off with threat analysis, your attack surface. The first story we're going to cover under threat analysis is going to be the Plex and LastPass story. In the last episode of the Oh No News, I covered LastPass and their vulnerability history. Or I should say their recent vulnerability history. I did not want to include the name Plex back then. I wanted to read some more on it. So that way when I reported using the name Plex, I would have a little bit more details and I felt like that was a more responsible approach. Now, I just want to be clear. Currently, it is pure speculation that Plex Media Server was involved in the LastPass data breach. A Plex vulnerability dubbed CVE-2020-5741 was patched in May of 2020, but a Bleeping Computer article states, quote,
"This is likely linked to LastPass,"
close quote. Later in that same Bleeping Computer article, which you can find in the show notes, all articles mentioned here will be in the show notes, I just wanted to state that. Bleeping Computer linked to an ARS Technica article. The ARS Technica article states, quote,
"According to a person briefed on a private report from LastPass who spoke on conditions of anonymity, the media software package that was exploited on the employee's home computer was Plex,"
close quote. ARS Technica also mentioned in this article, quote,
"Interestingly, Plex reported its own network intrusion on August 24th, just 12 days after the second incident commenced,"
close quote. The second incident being the second LastPass incident. Just keep in mind, we're not saying the two are linked, but it is very interesting that right after LastPass had their incident, Plex has a data breach of their own. We're going to move on over to Plex and a security announcement that they've made regarding the CVE-2020-5741. Now let's go ahead and read a message from the Plex security team from May 2020. Quote,
"We have recently been made aware of a security vulnerability related to Plex Media Server. This issue allowed an attacker with access to the server administrator Plex account to upload a malicious file via the camera upload feature and have the media server executed. This could be done by setting the server data directory to overlap with the content location for a library on which the camera upload was enabled. This issue could not be exploited without first gaining access to the server's Plex account,"
close quote. Plex also mentioned that they're going to start mitigation in version 1.19.3 of the Plex Media Server. So there's one thing that I'm going to point out here. The attacker has to first have admin access on the system to the Plex Media Server. Most people already, you know, we give a pass to anyone or anyone's software when an attacker has root access on the machine. Kind of hard to just only blame Plex there, you know what I mean? What makes this bug a little more dangerous is, like they mentioned earlier, once the attacker has root access, they exploit this vulnerability within Plex and use Plex to then execute code without the user knowing it. Plex is being used as a link in the attack chain. Then after the latest LastPass incident in August of 2022, don't worry, I'm not going to cover all of the details that were mentioned in the last Oh No News, but shortly after LastPass's data breach in August of 2022, Approximately 12 days later, Plex also had a data breach in August of 2022. The Plex data breach was just as bad. I mean, LastPass is worse because, again, it's the keys to everyone's kingdom. However, the Plex data breach, the attacker had access to passwords, usernames, and emails of over 30 million customers. Plex, of course, went through the usual methods of requiring all of its customers to reset their passwords and other security measures. They also snuck in a little message at the bottom saying, "No payment data was leaked." Like that's going to do anybody any good, especially when it's tied to LastPass, right? I don't mean to laugh because this is a terrible thing that has happened, but I can just imagine trying to recover your reputation when something like this gets out.
That's no good.
After having ARS Technica mention that a confidential informant from LastPass stated that it was Plex's fault this whole thing happened, which is kind of funny, right? It does feel like pointing the finger here. You know, LastPass with all their terrible policies now trying to go, no, it wasn't us. You know, Plex and their software is why this whole thing occurred. Plex did not respond in the way that we're used to within the online/Linux community.
Thank you for calling LastPass. How may I help you?
How dare you try to drag Plex into your nonsense? You and your buggy half-baked beta software, we didn't...
No, we didn't get that. Instead, Plex gave us something a little bit more classy and professional. Quote,
"We have not been contacted by LastPass, so we cannot speak to the specifics of their incident. We take security issues very seriously and frequently work with external parties who report issues, big or small, using our guidelines and bug bounty program. When vulnerabilities are reported, following responsible disclosure, we address them swiftly and thoroughly. And we've never had a critical vulnerability published for which there wasn't already a patched version released."
Close quote. So there you have it, folks. That's what I have so far on this whole Plex and LastPass debacle. LastPass attempting a graceful landing. Only problem is they're moving at about 400 kilometers per hour, so I don't know how graceful it's going to be. They attempted to pull the Plex parachute at the last second, and the evidence that came from it all does kind of suggest Plex may have had a part in it. However, I cannot state enough. This is like circumstantial evidence, right? These are things that are just happening around the same time period, and currently LastPass has not released any sort of actual data that they've gathered from the employee's home computer that would suggest that, yes, indeed, Plex did play a part in this. So this is all just mere speculation. So let's move on from here. If there's more details in the future, I'll bring you back in on it. Our next story.
KeePass.
Not to be confused with KeePass XC.
Vulnerability allows attackers with write access to the XML config to export clear text passwords.
This story was brought to us by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology. All right, I'm going to boil this one down. This is a vulnerability with the KeePass database file, but in order for it to be exploited, the attacker would need to have physical access to the machine, with the user that controls the password database file being already logged in. So like if you were to walk away from your PC and just left it logged in and someone walked up to that PC and, you know, found your KeePass database, they can then exploit this vulnerability. So either that or an attacker with root access to your machine. In other words, your PC was already owned. So this vulnerability is just sort of a side effect of your PC being owned. Now, with that said, it's still pretty rough because you expect your password vault to keep your passwords secure. KeePass has patched this, by the way, and I have some supporting articles down in the show notes that'll take you to the different articles showing the patched versions, which I believe is 2.53 is the version that is patched, or 2.53.3, something like that. I just wanted to report this in what I feel to be a more responsible manner before it gets out there that, oh no!
Oh no!
KeePass XC is, you know, super vulnerable and you're going to lose all your passwords because, you know, other stories with LastPass and everything else that's happening out there. So, you know now, if you're using KeePass, just make sure you keep it up to date. Don't let anybody you don't know access your computer. Right? And you'll be just fine. All right, let's go ahead and pivot on over to the user space version of the show. First article.
How to delete yourself from the internet.
Goodbye.
I'm going to go ahead and spoil it for you here, folks. You cannot actually delete yourself from the internet. Yeah, once you've uploaded something to someone else's computer, just because you made a request for them not to display it to you anymore, doesn't mean it's not there anymore. But the article goes on telling you different methods about sending requests over to Google to remove information because it reveals very private information like your phone number, your home address, or things like that. And Google will remove it from the search results. They also go on to show you how to, you know, delete social media accounts and other chat service accounts. One of the good things about the article is they talked about Firefox Relay a little bit, you know, just for a teeny bit, which, yay, Firefox, right? Mentioned some information about using VPNs, which is good information, but it doesn't, you know, it keeps you private on the internet. It won't actually delete you. This is just preemptive measures and remaining anonymous on the internet. And understand that's still very limited, depending on who's coming after you or who's looking for you. If they have enough time and resources, they'll find you. But I thought it was still a nice little article to mention for user space. If you were looking to clean up your trail just a little bit and you wanted a nice method to go about that, I thought this article was decent. Especially if you can find your personal information in a Google search, like right on the search page, your phone number or something just pops up and you don't know why. Yeah, you might want to take care of that. In our next article.
Mark Zuckerberg's Meta exploring plans to launch Twitter rival.
Yeah, I included this one in user space because I thought it was funny. Facebook's basically, from what it sounds like, Facebook's basically playing around with a Mastodon-like instance. So there's the idea written in the story that Meta, aka Facebook, is going to be launching a Twitter alternative, something like Mastodon. But it, of course, it's going to be centralized instead of decentralized. And it's just plans for now. There's no real evidence of it. Apparently, he's nervous about how TikTok's taken over, drawing a bunch of his Instagram models and things away from the platform. So got to come up with something fresh and hip and, you know, all the other cliche nonsense. My throat's starting to give out here. I've been drinking a ton of water, but we're going to push on, folks. We're going to keep going. Let's go ahead and change over to the next segment, which is Toys for Techs. All right. Remember the last time we did this, it's kind of hard to find cool toys for techs. But the first one I found was a nice little e-ink display, which is mounted to a Raspberry Pi Pico wireless board. And it's called the Inky Frame 4. It has Wi-Fi connectivity. You can mount extra storage using an SD card. Very low power usage. Now for some details on that e-ink display, it's the e-ink gallery palette 4000 e-paper. I don't know if that makes sense to you or not, but I got some links in the description if it doesn't. It's an ACEP, which stands for advanced color e-paper, 7 color with black, white, red, green, blue, yellow, and orange. And it looks pretty cool. It looks like a nice little wall mount system or whatever if you wanted like just a little e-display somewhere. So you can imagine this thing is going to be super low power because of that e-ink technology, and it's colored. They have some of the some little images displaying the color palette, and they show things like the pillars of creation and a few other really cool images that look fairly nice. But you know, just take a look at it. I didn't see any availability on it. Like they're out of stock at the moment. So yeah, might be supply chain issues or who knows, but it looks really cool and I thought I'd show it off here. Oh, and I almost forgot. Phil King, the author of the article, he gave it a wonderful review. Quote,
"A classy color e-ink display whose Wi-Fi connectivity greatly extends the possible uses, including as a digital photo art frame, life organizer, a low-powered smart home dashboard.
Close quote. Now, because I don't know anything about C or C++ or MicroPython, I can't give you a ton of detail on that, but I have included links in the description for the libraries. I think it links to GitHub and shows you some code examples and stuff like that. I was just poking around, and obviously I can't really make sense of what I'm looking at, but it's there. If you can, you can look at it, and they have the schematic, so it's pretty nice. I think that's a nice little toy for text. I think it comes in, the whole device with the Pi Pico and everything comes in at about $70, I think it was. So if that's something you're interested in, that whole e-ink thing, I remember that was big a little while ago. Yeah, take a look at that. All right, last but not least, our last toy and story for today. We're looking at the Yubico UBSHM2, which is like one of the really, really small form factor YubiKeys. This one was created specifically for the public sector, and they go into detail about all the different changes that they're making for this device. It's not a very podcast-friendly story, and I'll just give you an example of why. It's got a lot of alphabet soup in it, so here's a quick little line from the story here. Support for Advanced Encryption Standards, AES, in Electronic Codebook, ECB, and Cipher Block Chaining, CBC, modes, right? So then when you want to read further into that, and you go with AES is one of the most widely used symmetric cryptograph algorithms and can be used in several modes such as ECB, CBC, CCM, and GCM. All right, I'm going to stop there because, you know, like I mentioned, this isn't a very podcast friendly thing to read, but it's Yubico, it's more security, and they talk some about the different threats that are out there. It's all the usual ones, zero-day exploits, other type of malware that's out there. It's not going to help you against something like ransomware, but still, you know, if somebody's trying to break in and get your credentials, yeah, this little device, super low profile. For me personally, I'd have to keep it on the lanyard because I got kind of, you know, fat fingers. I can't really pinch down to pull such a small device out of the USB slot once it's inserted. So, like, if you take a look at it in the show notes down there, it's quite the form factor. All right, ladies and gentlemen. Now, my closing thoughts here before we end the show. I just wanted to mention that I reconfigured the way the show notes are so that it is more accessible to listeners who want to go through the show notes. I had some help from HPR members. I want to give a shout out to Mike Ray for assisting me via email. No, it must have been annoying the crap out of him, just blasting him with an email. Been over here, hey Mike, would you take a look at this one? You know, just constantly sending emails back and forth, trying to get him to look at stuff as I'm making changes. So I thank him for assisting me with that. And Dave as well. Dave gave me some help. He pointed me in a direction that would allow me to, you know, learn other features using Pandoc. And yeah, I mean, I believe we got the show notes looking pretty good. And I included an additional information section at the bottom of the notes. You can go through that to learn more if you're new to HPR and all of this security and technology. I've got some standardized notes I'd like to continue including with future shows, future Oh No News shows. So that's about it. Thank you guys for listening, and I'll see you guys in the next episode.
Goodbye.
You have been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. Today's show was contributed by a HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hosting for HPR has been kindly provided by anhonesthost.com, the Internet Archive, and rsync.net. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International License.